This Morning, America's First News starts right after this. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This Morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Redemption for the heels. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka, Tuesday, April 4. Thanks for being with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
With last year's disappointing loss in the title game as motivation, the North Carolina men's basketball team won the NCAA tournament last night by beating Gonzaga.
On Capitol Hill, Senate Democrats have enough votes to filibuster Supreme Court nominee Neil Gorsuch. Question now is, will Republicans change the rules?
Overseas, at least 14 people have died from a terror bombing at a train station in St. Petersburg, Russia.
And why this spring will be one of the toughest periods in years for buying a home.
So bad news for everyone who's just maybe starting to go on Zillow, starting to go on their local listing site and check out the market. It's going to be the toughest market, certainly since the peak of the housing boom in 2006.
Wall Street Journal reporter Laura Casisto on the three things making this spring difficult for home buyers. She's here in about 20 minutes. North Carolina outdueled Gonzaga to win the NCAA tournament last night 71-65 in a game that was close right to the end. In the final moments, a blocked Gonzaga shot turned into a runaway dunk for Justin Jackson, sealing it for the Tar Heels in Glendale, Arizona. Joel Berry II led the way with 22 points and 6 assists, while Jackson added 16. After trailing by 3 at halftime, UNC held Gonzaga to under 28% shooting in the second half. It's the 6th title for the Tar Heels and 3rd for Coach Roy Williams.
They're all extremely special. I've been very, very lucky, but I'd say this one is probably more special because it's been a journey for the last 3 or 4 years of trying to do something.
And guys like Jackson and Berry, by the way, get credit for keeping their commitments to UNC after a scandal rocked the university over fake classes offered to athletes. Legal maneuvering has stalled the investigation, but Carolina could still be punished. Virtually every key contributor on this year's North Carolina squad returned from last season's disappointing buzzer-beater loss to Villanova. To Washington now, Senate Democrats have collected enough votes for a filibuster later this week that would block consideration of Neil Gorsuch for the Supreme Court. Yesterday was the day that Judge Gorsuch advanced on a straight party-line vote in the Senate Judiciary Committee. The GOP majority has the power to change the rules to eliminate the 60-vote requirement on Supreme Court nominees, a rule change known as the nuclear option. Here's Delaware Democratic Senator Chris Coons.
It would be tragic if Judge Gorsuch's confirmation process leads the Senate Republicans to join the majority leader in abolishing the 60-vote threshold for cloture on the nomination of a Supreme Court justice.
South Carolina Republican Senator Lindsey Graham.
I'm going to vote to change the rules because I'm not going to be part of a Senate where Democrats get their judges and a Republican can never get theirs. That's not what it's all about.
A successful filibuster against a Supreme Court nominee has not been mounted since 1968, though President Obama's nominee for the same court vacancy a year ago was denied a hearing and a vote. Well, since Senate Democrats have enough votes to mount a filibuster, this sets up a fight over the chamber's rules that could reshape the way the institution considers future nominees to the court. It's a story by Wall Street Journal White House correspondent Byron Tao. Byron, what do we have?
So this is just another erosion in the Senate's sort of special privileges and distinctions, which make it different from the House. Traditionally, the Senate has been a place where the minority party has had a lot of input on nominations and legislation and could throw up all sorts of roadblocks, which meant that ultimately members in the Senate had to work together a little bit better than members of the House. Democrats first changed the rules in 2013, though Republicans in the past had threatened to change the rules, but that was only for lower court nominees and for cabinet nominees. This would be for all nominees, including the Supreme Court, which is a position that has long gotten some sort of bipartisan traction and support in terms of getting members from both parties to support nominees, and it would be a big change and a big difference in the way Senate does business.
So you point out that South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham was involved in something of a negotiation years ago, and he's saying now that like these traditions are going to change over Neil Gorsuch because he's about as qualified as you're going to get.
That's right. Lindsey Graham, 12 years ago, was part of a group of senators called the Gang of 14. At the time, Republicans controlled the Senate. George W. Bush was the president. He was trying to make a number of lower court nominations that Democrats opposed, and they were mounting filibusters. And so Senate Republicans, who ran the Senate at the time, were threatening to change the rules. But 14 senators, seven Democrats, seven Republicans, came to an agreement to avoid this sort of showdown. And, you know, that doesn't seem to be happening today. It seems like we're barreling full speed ahead towards a rules change. There don't appear to be any gangs or any serious negotiations to try to find a way out of this. And that's a big difference from just 12 years ago.
Wow. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal White House correspondent Byron Tao. He's written a piece entitled "Democrats Have Votes to Block Neil Gorsuch, Sparking Rule Change Fight." Boy, if, as you mentioned, if this was 12 years ago, he'd be a slam dunk, right? Probably 98-2 we'd get in.
That's right, and we've seen a steady increase in the partisanship around Supreme Court votes, including the use of the filibuster. For example, Clarence Thomas, when he was nominated back in the, I can't remember, late 80s or early 90s, but a number of sexual harassment allegations were raised during his confirmation hearings, and yet he wasn't filibustered by the minority Democrats. And so this is something that's really changed dramatically in the past few years. Even President Obama's two successful Supreme Court picks were confirmed by with some bipartisan support. So we've really seen a real erosion in the bipartisanship around Supreme Court votes, and this may be one of the most partisan votes in history on a Supreme Court nominee.
Ultimately, this is really all about politics, right? The Republicans are going to roll the dice with the option of going nuclear, and Democrats are rolling the dice by appearing to be blocking a guy who's perfectly well qualified.
That's right. And, you know, both parties are under a lot of pressure here from members of their political base. For example, a lot of liberal activists and progressives are putting a lot of pressure on Democrats not to support anything that Donald Trump does, including this particular Supreme Court nomination. On the other hand, Republicans, their voters definitely want to give the new president a win and by and large, do support this nominee to the Supreme Court. And so both sides are just under a lot of political pressure, and the political incentives are to sort of fall in line with the party and the party's activists, regardless of the peril that the Senate, longtime institutional rules in the Senate, whatever the consequences are to them.
Boy, what if, what about the idea, Byron, that time heals all wounds?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I certainly think with the midterms, there is some political pressure on members of both parties, especially vulnerable Democrats who are walking kind of a tightrope between some of them are up in states that Trump won, while some of them are facing primary challengers. So there's a lot of pressure on them. But by and large, after that, we move into presidential election season once again, and politics tends to rule during those years, too.
Thanks, Byron. Wall Street Journal White House correspondent Byron Tao. By the way, Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley told Fox News last night that Judge Gorsuch would be on the Supreme Court by Friday night. 14 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Good Tuesday to you. Terror attack in Russia. An explosion yesterday took place at a train station in St. Petersburg, killing 14 and wounding around four dozen others. No group has claimed responsibility. President Trump, meanwhile, spoke with Russian President Vladimir Putin last evening, expressing his condolences and offering any help that may be needed. Mr. Putin laid roses at a memorial site earlier today. Here he is through a translator.
I have already spoken with the heads of the security services. We will do everything to establish the cause of what has happened. City and federal authorities will do everything possible to support the families of our killed and injured citizens.
Security officials say another explosive device packed with shrapnel was later found and disarmed at a station not far from where the initial blast happened yesterday. There was another bomb threat phoned in today. Meanwhile, the likely suspect is a Russian citizen born in Kyrgyzstan. A spokesman for that country's security service identified the suspect, who was born in 1995, as Arbazhan Jalilov. He provided no other details. It's 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
Liberty, North Carolina lost last year's national title game to Villanova on a buzzer beater. 364 days later, the Tar Heels were victorious. North Carolina added to its illustrious history with a 71-65 win over Gonzaga in the national championship game last night. Junior guard Joel Berry II says this win was sweet.
Coach Rob just said, remember that moment and how we felt last year, and we don't want that again, so we just got to give it our all. And that's the moment where we locked in, and we went out there and just gave it our all, literally, and we were able to come out with the win.
North Carolina won its sixth national championship, withstanding a relentless Gonzaga attack in a game filled with fouls, missed free throws, and suspect shooting on both sides. A likely suspect in the blast that killed 14 people as it ripped through a subway car in St. Petersburg was a Russian citizen born in Kyrgyzstan. There was no immediate claim of responsibility for the attack, which came while President Vladimir Putin was visiting the city. Putin's translated remarks.
I have already spoken with the heads of the security services. We will do everything to establish the cause of what has happened. City and federal authorities will do everything possible to support the families of our killed and injured citizens.
Russian authorities now say the suspect was a suicide bomber. The Trump administration is warning U.S. companies it will investigate and prosecute firms that overlook qualified American workers for their jobs. The warning came on the opening day for applications for U.S. employers seeking H-1B visas used mostly by tech companies to hire programmers and other specialized workers. The CDC says most children who have died of flu in recent years were not vaccinated against the virus. Researchers found that at least three quarters of the 358 kids who died from influenza between 2010 and 2014 had not been vaccinated in the months before they got sick. The CDC says the numbers highlight the importance of annual flu vaccinations for children, especially those with underlying high-risk medical conditions. Harrison Ford won't face any penalties for mistakenly landing his single-engine plane on an Orange County, California airport taxiway. The actor, who admitted to air traffic control he'd been a schmuck, will retain his pilot certificate without restriction. The incident in February saw Ford fly low over an American Airlines plane with 110 passengers and crew on board.
Is that the way you avoid getting in trouble? Just admit to being a schmuck?
It'll work for him.
Wow.
Try it. Sometime.
Next time I get pulled over something.
Yeah.
Do you know why I pulled you over? Yes, officer, I was being a schmuck. Carry on, Mr. Deal. Have a good evening. Right?
Try it out.
See how that works. 23 minutes now after the hour. Thanks for being with us. If you like competition, the housing market this spring is for you. It's expected to be the toughest period for buyers in a decade. In fact, the chief economist at Redfin believes 2017 will be the fastest market since the peak of the last housing boom in 2006. And why not? So far this year, homes are selling an average of 8 days faster than last year. More on what's in store for buyers from Wall Street Journal housing reporter Laura Casisto. Laura, what's the scene?
So bad news for everyone who's just maybe starting to go on Zillow, starting to go on their local listing site and check out the market. It's going to be the toughest market, certainly since the peak of the housing boom in 2006. And there's a few reasons for that. One of them is that prices are going up quickly. That's combining with mortgage rates that are going up and with inventory that is near the lowest rate since the lowest level since 1999. So all those three things together mean it's going to be harder to find a home and more expensive.
Wow. How did all these things come to be? Well, we know about the raising of the rates, but this is just what, a normal bounce back and supply pushing those prices up?
This is certainly not a normal bounce back, and that's the problem. So we've had a normal bounce back in demand. We have demand going up, more young people getting into their 30s and wanting to buy a home, the economy getting better, wages getting better, people feeling like it's finally time to buy, and of course rents going up, so people really thinking we should get in the market and buy. But what isn't following is supply. In a normal market, in a normal recovery, we would see supply at much higher levels than it is right now, and that's for a few different reasons. We're just seeing home builders being really slow to ramp up. We're seeing homeowners not want to put their homes in the market because they have such low mortgage rates. So all those things together, it's really just sort of a perfect storm for the market.
Jeez. All right. So are there particular markets where the kind of the spikes have been really eye-popping?
So, I mean, the markets that everyone loves to talk about are Seattle, Denver, Portland, San Francisco, But what's interesting is that we're seeing this phenomenon really spread outside of those places. So I featured Minneapolis in my story. Minneapolis has seen a 25% drop in inventory since last year. They're seeing prices rise by 7.6%. We had this great story about this this realtor who held an open house and had more than 80 people come through. And before she just said, I just stopped counting. I just started giving people a hug. So even pretty sleepy markets like Minneapolis are just on fire right now.
Goodness. So what? And you know, Minneapolis just showed up as like one of the best five places to retire. Also, what's the draw there?
Yeah, well, I mean, it has a pretty strong economy. It's got a beautiful lakes. I mean, maybe not the balmiest. I mean, it's not quite Florida, but it's sort of a great city. And I think it's also part of this trend of just seeing more people want to live in cities, not wanting to live in the suburbs, but there's just not a lot of supply in those places. So if you kind of want to live an easy commute to work, you're just going to have a lot of competition.
Thanks, Laura. Wall Street Journal housing reporter Laura Casisto. 30 minutes now after the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. When a state ranks among the top 10 in the country for major new and expanded facilities, that's pure growth. When it's tops for three straight years, that's pure Michigan. Long known as a world leader in the automotive industry, Michigan is also a leader in defense, cybersecurity, mobility, agribusiness, and aerospace. In fact, CNBC rates Michigan among the top 10 states in the country for business. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org, because helping business grow is pure Michigan. The powerful performance and incredible battery life of new Dell PCs with Intel Core processors empower small business employees to do their best work wherever work takes them. Dell's U.S.-based small business advisors and price match guarantee mean you'll always get the best deal on the right solution tailored to your business needs. Powerful PCs are just the beginning of a great partnership. Call 877-BUY-DELL now to contact the Dell Small Business Advisor today. That's 877-BUY-DELL.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show, like us on Facebook, or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
Hey, glad you're with us on this Tuesday, April 4. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. North Carolina champs of college basketball. Democrats have the votes to filibuster Gorsuch. 14 dead in a train station terror attack in Russia. Death toll from Colombian mudslides is now 273. Former National Security Advisor Susan Rice being asked to testify on reports that she sought to unmask the names of Trump transition officials. Prison Break returns to Fox this evening. Georgetown hired Patrick Ewing as its new coach. And the hazards of cutting down basketball nets when you win a title. That story in about 20 minutes. Well, pit bulls are moving out of shelters and into jobs once reserved for other breeds as police dogs. A couple of organizations seek to reverse a stigma associated with pit bulls as overly aggressive and also to provide school districts and local law enforcement with free alternatives to traditional police dogs. It's a story from Wall Street Journal education reporter Tonnell Hobbs. Tonnell, who's involved?
There's this New York foundation. It's called Animal Farm Foundation, and they partner with Universal Canine, and they are a canine training facility here in Texas. And what they do is they rescue pit bulls from shelters, and then the canine training outfit, they train the dogs, and then they place them in school districts and school district police departments and city police departments for free, which obviously the cities and school district police departments like it, because typically it could cost at least $20,000 to get a canine. So it serves a purpose of rescuing these pit bulls from the shelters. It also helps, you know, combat that stigma that they have as being, you know, temperamental dogs.
Right, right.
And it helps these city and school district police departments out, who typically, in some cases, they just can't afford to have a canine unit.
Wow. All right. So what do they have the dogs doing?
Well, they can do different. It depends on the department. Like the dog that I profiled, Athena, her primary function right now is to sniff for drugs, and she can sniff out cocaine, marijuana, and there's probably about five different drugs she can sniff out. And eventually they want to get her into sniffing out explosives. But some dogs can also do what they call like a trace, you know, tracking people, like, you know, they could you know, sniff a shirt, and then they can go try to find that person or locate them. So they can do different things. I mean, it's they can even smell for cell phones, some of them.
Jeez. All right, so how are they to train? Because I normally think of a, you know, a canine unit as a shepherd or maybe a lab sniffing a car for drugs or something like that. How are the pit bulls to train versus the other dogs?
You know, I was talking to the operations director over Universal K-9 is a guy, Brad Croft, and he said they're really not much different to train at all. You know, he says that it's just basically what happened was actually a few years ago he had started trying to train, you know, he was training the pit bulls, but he was just finding it hard for people to take them because of the stigma. So he'd get these dogs trained up and people wouldn't want them. So that was probably the most challenging part for him. But, you know, he said that they're very smart dogs and they catch on quick. It was just, you know, trying to overcome that stigma. But with this program and the partnership with the Animal Farm Foundation, you know, they've placed about 25 dogs now, pit bulls, in this program.
Okay.
And they're hoping to expand and continue on.
Wow. We're speaking with Tonnell Hobbs, education reporter at the Wall Street Journal. She's written a piece called New Breed of Police Dogs, Pit Bulls. All right. So as you point out, though, they have their opponents, right? They're either, some of these dogs are even banned outright in some big cities.
Yeah.
So then what?
Yeah, well, and they do. I mean, I've received tons of emails from people that are very concerned because, you know, there is that stigma. I mean, when you look at some of the shelters around the country, pit bulls, it's not uncommon for them to make up the majority in that shelter. Yeah, that's going to be interesting because, like you said, there are some cities, I know Denver's one of them that outright ban, and then there's some places where there's a lot of places that there's actual restrictions on breeds like, you know, terriers that are classified as pit bulls and then these pit bull mixes. So, I don't know if they would be using this program. I guess we'd have to see how much they want to expand it. But, I don't know. It's really interesting to see as more people use or more entities use these canine pit bulls. If some of those restrictions might start lifting in other places, I don't know. I have to watch for that.
I know you've had a lot of comments on your story. What then? You mentioned some emails before. What's it been like? Are people generally receptive, or is it split?
No, it's kind of split. I mean, you know, then you get into the whole thing, the whole conversation about what is a pit bull. And pit bull is really a common name. There's certain terrier breeds that are actually, you know, considered pit bull. So when you look at a lot of these cities with restrictions, you'll see them listed, those terriers. And then they also do the mixed breed dogs, which those are going to be your dogs. They're going to have the stocky, bulky type build like a pit bull, and they're probably part pit bull. But, you know, the reaction has just really, really been mixed. But it's online, I believe, there's probably more people that just love the thought of these pit bulls being rescued from the shelters and being put in service like this.
Thanks, Tonnell. Wall Street Journal education reporter Tonnell Hobbs. It's 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, some good news for selfie fans. The U.S. Supreme Court yesterday passed on an opportunity to rule on a New Hampshire law banning voters from sharing ballot selfies on social media. That means a September ruling by a federal appeals court toppling the state's first-in-the-nation 2014 ban on ballot selfies is no more. New Hampshire has argued that selfies at the polls could encourage the buying of votes or intimidation of voters, but the appeals court saw little evidence of that being possible. New Hampshire was the first state to specifically outlaw ballot selfies, but 16 states have older laws that could be construed to prohibit them.
All right. Freedom in New Hampshire.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. And remember, this is, you know, this kind of turned into a big thing around Election Day. Remember Justin Timberlake? There was some thought that he might get in trouble because on Election Day he was in Tennessee, I guess, and posted a picture of him at the polls to encourage people to get out and vote. And they have one of these sort of older laws that it kind of, you know, is construed to possibly mean that you're not allowed to do that. This kind of became a big deal. Again, all the way almost to the Supreme Court. Thankfully, though, because I feel like the Supreme Court has bigger things that they should be weighing on, especially short-handed as they are, this is probably a good thing that they did not take this up.
I like that it is said that sometimes this could lead potentially to the intimidation of voters.
Yeah.
like with what Justin Timberlake did, perhaps, with a friendly, smiling selfie, and how you could be intimidated by that.
Yeah. I don't exactly know what that means. I think these are kind of thoughts that kind of go back a ways, but for whatever reason, this is still a concern, even in today's day and age.
Okay.
And get ready, America. Dictionary.com has just added 300 new words to reflect our culture, obsessions, and changing language. Some of these aren't super safe for radio, and others are just plain head-scratchers. Some of the highlights we are allowed to highlight include cheat day, clicktivist, dabbing, and dad bod. Also, lightsaber, which seems long overdue as we approach the 40th anniversary of the first release of Star Wars. Man bun also made the list, just in time for that all-too-fashionable style choice to hopefully start to fade into memory. Routing out the notable additions are alt-right, mic drop, smackdown, superfood, and teachable moment. Mm. That one I think you helped make popular. That's what's one of your favorite phrases, isn't it?
I do like that one. I was glad to see throw shade on there.
Oh, yes.
But I have to go back to like your opening two sentences here, and you say there are words that are not super safe for radio.
Right. And of course, you
care to expand.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, there's one. Yeah. There's a phrase out there where somebody who looks like that they're, you know, kind of not happy all the time.
Okay.
Right. That's their natural state of being. And they are resting blank. That is their face is at resting blank. That is that was the phrase that that was actually that second word there that made the
it's the B word.
The B word, yes.
Followed by face.
Yes, that's the one that made
the
it.
The B-I-T-C-H face.
Oh, okay, sure, if you want to go there.
That, just confirming that that's it.
Your name's on the show. You can confirm anything you want.
Say it, Mike. You won't say it. Struggle bus was on there?
Yes, struggle bus. One I don't know. That sounds super millennial.
Apparently it's like some difficult experience you're going through.
Yeah.
Struggle bus. I never heard that
one before.
That's
not one that's used around my house.
13 minutes now in front of the hour.
Hi, Auntie Christine. Thanks for the Easter basket you sent me. It has all my favorite candies and a stuffed bunny rabbit.
Surprise the little ones in your life with personalized plush Easter baskets from Personal Creations. Each plush animal Easter basket comes filled with free candy and a free stuffed bunny, all for $19.99. Plus, you can have it personalized with any name for free. To get this special Easter deal, go to personalcreations.com. Click the orange star in the upper right corner and enter the secret code 0200. That's personalcreations.com, secret code 0200.
The powerful performance and incredible battery life of new Dell PCs with Intel Core processors empower small business employees to do their best work wherever work takes them. Dell's U.S.-based small business advisors and price match guarantee mean you'll always get the best deal on the right solution tailored to your business needs. Powerful PCs are just the beginning of a great partnership. Call 877-BUY-DELL now to contact a Dell small business advisor today. That's 877-BUY-DELL. Time now for a small business update, and it's brought to you by Staples. Filing your own taxes this year, Staples helps you be accountable with everything you need for tax season for less. Look for great prices on storage boxes, filing supplies, even software like QuickBooks and TurboTax. Staples, make more happen. Some workers at a Swedish company will have microchips embedded in their hands that will allow the company to track their every move. Epicenter will embed a chip into about 150 workers who have volunteered so bosses can monitor things like bathroom breaks and how long they work. The microchip is about as big as a grain of rice, implanted for free. The CEO says the microchips would simplify life. With the radio frequency identification chip, workers will be able to open doors and use office technology like photocopiers. The chip can even pay for lunch. Once chipped, the participants can interact with the building with a simple swipe of the hand. Chips can also be programmed to hold contact information and talk to smartphone apps. You can even book airline tickets or swipe into your gym. It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koschenka is back with more of America's First News.
Court and Senate Republicans are gearing up for the next step in the confirmation battle over Supreme Court nominee Neil Gorsuch and appear committed to invoking the so-called nuclear option of changing Senate rules. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell blames the Democrats.
This is a new low, but not entirely surprising, given that the Democratic leader announced before the nomination was even made that it was hard for him to imagine a nominee this president would nominate that he could support.
Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer says Democrats have enough votes to block Gorsuch from being confirmed under the body's current rules.
The answer isn't to change the rules. The answer is to change the nominees.
The Senate is slated to take an initial vote this week. White House officials have made a new offer to conservative House Republicans on the GOP's failed health care bill, hoping to resuscitate a measure that crashed 2 weeks ago. Vice President Mike Pence and two top White House officials made the offer in a closed-door meeting with members of the House Freedom Caucus. Caucus member Mark Meadows.
Every one of the no's expressed a willingness to look at this in a very detailed manner.
Opposition from the hardline group contributed to circumstances that forced House Speaker Paul Ryan to withdraw the bill. A Fox News contributor has come forward to level more sexual harassment allegations against deposed CEO Roger Ailes. 2 days after it was revealed the network's most popular on-air personality, Bill O'Reilly, has settled multiple complaints about his own behavior with women. The new lawsuit against Ailes was brought by Fox's Julie Roginski and is notable because it accuses Fox's current management of trying to cover up for Ailes. No surprise here. Now that he's been excused from the sidelines as an NFL coach, Rex Ryan is taking a new job. The outspoken Ryan will be joining ESPN as part of its Sunday NFL Countdown show as an analyst. The move comes just a few months after Ryan was let go as head coach of the Bills, where he went 15-16 in two seasons. Before that, he spent 6 years, of course, with your beloved Jets.
Mm. The outspoken types tend to make for decent analysts.
Oh, yeah. As soon as he got fired, they were like, he's going to TV.
Yeah. I wonder what it'd be like during an actual game broadcast, like a John Madden type.
Perhaps.
Know, those old spirited ones, you know, it'd be interesting to watch.
Slow. He's moving in.
Yeah. Thank you, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Cutting down the nets is one of college basketball's distinctive traditions. When teams win a conference tournament, regional title, or national championship game, the scissors come out, the ladders go up, the nets are cut down. The New York Times seems to be trying to paint this as a dangerous tradition. No injuries reported for North Carolina last night. But the Times says when Michigan won the Big Ten tournament last month, assistant coach Billy Donlin made his snip, retreated down the ladder, handed off the scissors to his fellow assistant, Jeff Meyer, gripping the blades and offering the handle, like we're taught. But he cut his palm during the exchange. Says it was a combo of his holding onto the scissors too tightly and Coach Meyer's grabbing them too forcefully. The wound required 3 stitches. North Carolina coach Roy Williams sustained a similar cut during a regional championship celebration last year. And how about this? The Times says NC State coach Jim Valvano famously had his players practice cutting down the nets in order to condition them to being winners. You'll recall they won it all in 1983. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.